Welcome to a special bonus edition of the Metal Hammer podcast. I'm Mo, and I'm joined by the one, the only, Trivium frontman, Twitch superstar, I think it's fair to say these days, Mr. Matthew Heafy. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, man. I see we both have our apocalypse beards growing nicely.
This is just my beard.
I feel like every dude has like a beard right now. Every single one that doesn't normally have a beard. But yes, you do normally have something. Yes, but I never have this mess. And you can see my Irish side now. See the redness?
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, look at that. There's what does the other half think of the beard? Because mine is not. I've been saying I might try out some comedy moustaches, and mine.
she knows that it's, you know, it's pandemic beard. So I was just running because there was a bee on my head as I was pointing out my beard.
Oh, okay, good.
That's what that was. Yeah, good old Florida. Everything in the state will try to kill a human, as we will be discussing about the Tiger King.
Good, good. Yeah, well, yeah, that was, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was going to be my first point of discussion. I mean, if there was ever proof that you are a man that knows how to read the room, it's surely your cover of I Saw a Tiger by Joe Exotic. Yep.
It's at least these days that I've learned how to read a room. I think it's within the last two records I've learned how to read a room.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes. yes.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like people are, obviously, we're doing this. We were supposed to do this in person in London. Obviously, that's not happened because of everything that's going on. And it feels like people are more desperate than ever for kind of fun shit that makes them feel
yes good. Yes,
I think you've definitely proven that with the reactions to a lot of the stuff you're doing at the moment.
Well, that's why I've been streaming this intensively for 2.5 years, 5 days a week off tour, 7 days a week on tour, but I look at it reaffirms even more now for me, people need something to watch and do and hopefully help them disconnect. I like that it's a place now, it's a way to keep people off the streets, essentially, that I'm keeping entertainment going for them. I'm able to present a good message, in my opinion, of especially what's happening right now, because like this isn't the end of the world, nor is this something this bee really wants me, nor is this something that should be brushed off and taken lightly. This is something that needs to be approached somewhere in the middle of let's be precautious, let's be preemptive, let's get this thing done with by encouraging. I've been preferring the term over social distancing. I've been preferring the term physical distancing.
Yes, very true. I've heard a lot of people say this.
Yes, because social distancing is encouraging people to be really inward, and it's sort of isolating people away. So I've been pushing people, no, we need social connectivity from a safe distance, whether that's 6+ feet away, you know, waving to your neighbor and talking to them 6 feet away, or having, you know, being somewhere where you're talking to a human 6 feet away, you're not going to get sick. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I don't want people to feel isolated and socially isolated. And while people are struggling to make ends meet, people losing their jobs, people don't have things to do, I'm so happy that I'm able to provide a place that it is their pub, their coffee shop, their local restaurant, their library, their music venue. It's all these things in one. And that's why, that's what always has motivated me to make music, first of all. But to do this as well, I feel like this is an extension of it. It's making people's day just a little bit better during this time. So I think that's why the whole world gravitated towards Tiger King, because it's ridiculous. It puts our lives into perspective and shows that. Now, I know a lot of other parts of the world are going to see this and go, holy cow, this is an isolated incident. This does not happen much. That show is very Florida, very Oklahoma, very Texas, and at times very America. Like, yeah, a lot of those things aren't that shocking when we're watching them, but then some things are incredibly shocking. So I think for us, I think there's like a psychology of people who watch horror films that have high anxiety or depression. It actually helps them. Maybe it's counteracting those intense things or seeing something that is going through that kind of trauma and not you. So whatever Tiger King is for the world right now, it's making people feel a little bit better. Normally my wife and I, we don't ever watch dramatic things or intense things, but we've been watching Chernobyl and Tiger King.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why, but
yeah, Chernobyl's pretty intense to be watching in these times, God.
Yeah, and man, episode one or all of them, it makes me feel like likely how the response was done in a couple of countries to this even. I think this kind of makes it a tale as old as time. So I think it is like watching things that are slightly more disastrous helps put things into perspective a little bit more for us and makes us realize that it's not that bad. I mean, this isn't a nuclear reactor outside of our house, although this is something very deadly. But yeah, Tiger King. The show's nuts. I knew it was time to cover that song right away. I loved that song. People wanted me to do Hey Kitty Kitty or Here Kitty Kitty, but that song does incite and encourage violence against another person, and that's something I don't want to promote. Like, the video's hilarious, the song's hilarious, but we all don't really know what happened in that situation. And yeah.
And I'm not sure I want to.
Yeah.
Quite frankly.
Yeah. Holy cow, man.
Yeah. I mean, God knows what's going on. It definitely feel like it was something that kind of was unleashed onto the world at exactly the right time. You know, everyone was just desperate to find something crazy.
Yep.
And I don't know if fun's even the right word, because there's a lot of strange and dark and
difficult. Yeah, because episode one is fun. You're like, oh man, this is gonna be really good. And then instantly you're like, this is insane.
Yeah.
It's like all those cheesy made for TV, I don't know, murder mystery shows, but real.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. Almost too strange for fiction.
Yeah, exactly. And what I love so much too, if the difference of me doing live streaming versus pre-produced videos is live is, it's always connected. Like I'm always there. So whatever is new, I could try it immediately. Like when that Witcher song came about, I had thousands of tweets. People
again,
asked me.
Super zeitgeisty, right on the money people are talking about.
Yeah. Thousands of people were texting me like, or messaging me on social media, like, hey, is that you on Witcher? I was like, what? So I finally looked it up. It's like, I guess that kind of sounds like me, but not really. Maybe the way I would pronounce things. I believe the singer's Polish. You know, he was singing sounds kind of British. I'm distantly British, like probably like 33% Irish, and like there's a little bit of British in there as well.
Okay.
But I pronounce things British, I noticed in my singing, which is interesting. It's a lot
of
British
diction
singers
is very eloquent.
And I noticed that British singers will pronounce things kind of Americanized sometimes. So maybe that's what it is, that the Polish singer Britishizes his stuff, and then me, the half Japanese Irish American guy, Britishizes his singing, and that's where people saw the connection. So that's why I covered that song as well. It's just I'm able to do them in the moment. This morning, what did I do? I did Everybody by Backstreet Boys and made it super dark.
Awesome.
And then I did a TV show from Iceland called Lazy Boy or Lazy Town. And they have
Town. The kids TV
Lazy
show.
Town. Yes.
With the girl
yes.
with the pink hair.
I only saw the guys look like a mutant Phil Dunphy from Modern Family. The guy with the weird hair. Yeah.
It's like a girl and some puppets and like
yes.
a bad guy and a yeah.
Yeah, so it was the song, like the supervillains like anthem. But
okay.
It sounds like an oompa kind of German or gypsy jazz or Eastern European or Nordic, like but dark. It sounds kind of like Danny Elfman. It sounds like that vibe that I think My Chemical Romance had on Mama, or yes, Mama and Avenged had on the song with Oingo Boingo.
Oh, Little Piece of Heaven.
Yes. So it's that kind of vibe, but it was a kid's show. So I did that this morning as well. And I made that one also really strange and did mouth trumpet and stuff. So that's the beauty of live. Like I don't have to produce it or correct it, and having like a setup that's already pretty good, I can just make things on the fly. And that's what Tiger King was yesterday. I was like, I love this song. I'm going to make it. And I had a text from my A&R guy at the label while I was streaming. He's like, so Sirius Satellite Radio wants to play your cover. Can you send it to us? So now they're going to be playing that on satellite radio too, which is ridiculous.
Do you have to get that cleared? Does someone have to reach out to Joe Exotic's people?
I mean, I'm pretty darn sure that Joe didn't sing or write that.
Well, I have heard.
Yeah. I can't wait for the conspiracy theories behind that show. That's going to be fun.
We could be here all day. I mean, in between all this wonderful kind of happy content making that you're doing for everybody, you and Trivium have managed to put an album together, What the Dead Men Say, out April 24th. It is a hell of a record. We're going to get into that in some depth on the podcast at a future date. There's an interview with you in the brand new issue of Metal Hammer that's just come out, actually, where you're kind of talking about the recording process for this. And it's interesting because it felt like there was quite an extended cycle after The Sin and the Sentence. You know, it's been 2.5 years, which I suppose isn't too long, but maybe was a bit longer
long
than
for
anticipated. Mm-hmm. I thought it was quite telling that once you finally got the space and the time to make an album, you just got in the studio and you just didn't mess about. It was one of the kind of quickest turnarounds you've had on an album, right?
Yeah, it took us 16 days to record the entire record.
That's
but it's
crazy.
Because we started writing some of these riffs when Sin came out, and we never told anybody. That's what's pretty amazing too, that I am essentially the Truman Show. I'm always online somehow and always making content, but no one was the wiser that I was going to the studio at night when I was warming up and doing like morning streams. No one knew we were writing material. That's what's beautiful. Like, even though in this super connected age, we can try to strike up some mystery, because one of the things, the concepts we got right early on with Trivium is that we like to rebel against things that we do or that other people do. Like, we like to look at what is every band doing? How can we do it the exact opposite? And we did the same thing on Vengeance Falls, I remember, where every day we'll post a picture of something in the studio, like a picture of the mixing board. You guys aren't going to believe what's coming next. And like, that's what we've sort of seen all bands have turned to. And the initial spike in interest and excitement is here. Then it quickly starts to go down because there isn't something there. So we love that with Sin, we had everything ready, didn't tell anybody what was up. And the first thing that we drop is a new video and a new song. So we're like, let's make that kind of idea as well again, but do it a bit different. So we knew we wanted to make the record. We got the deadline in. We had the record totally finished for quite a bit before ever deciding what we're going to do. But we set up, all right, here's the release date months back. Here's where this video comes out. This video comes out. Now let's tease it up a little bit, but not over tease because we'll lose people's attention. Let's try to do it different. That's why we started doing the photos and just trying to come up with new, exciting ways to tease and to build anticipation with all the tools that we have today versus just allowing it to all be out. We very carefully curate the content that we're going to do.
That's cool. And in terms of the kind of the output that has resulted in, it feels like very much a continuation of the Sin in the Sentence, but it feels like a very layered record. I mean, how did you kind of manage to filter all these different ideas and bring this big melting pot together into something that still manages to have all these different things going on it, but still feels like a very concise album? I mean, it's kind of only 9 full proper tracks on there. So
we looked back at everything we've ever done, everything from right and wrong and good and bad. For Ember, Ascendancy, In Waves, Shogun, Sin, and Dead Men, we didn't think, are people going to like this? Are people not going to like this? When we did Ascendancy, we had no fans. We just made the kind of music that made us excited. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things. We made what we wanted to hear, not thinking if people are going to like or love or hate or loathe. Mm-hmm. We made sure that what we did was the same process that we did when we made those records. When we made those records, we started the riffs. We'd all get in a room with the four of us, no one else. We wouldn't allow the producer in by that point. We wouldn't let anyone else hear the music. We'd get the songs to a point where they're about 100%, in our eyes, 100%, mm-hmm. where we can play and sing the stuff. Because a big thing that we didn't do on Crusade, Vengeance, and Silence, and it's something that most bands surprisingly don't do, is vocal pre-production. I know that should be like a given. Like, if you're going to write a record, you should make sure you can play it and sing it. But a lot of bands don't do that, including us, for 3 out of 9 of the records. Crusade was my decision because we're in a weird place with our band at that point. We've gone over that stuff quite a bit. But I just didn't want to do vocal pre-production. We weren't really speaking as a band. We had all the reactions of, you know, all of a sudden we've got a territory that loves our band, that embraces our band, that Chain Reaction caused all of our, you know, peer bands and some of our favorite bands to really despise us and not want to bring us out and bully us and talk badly about our band. So it created that. Also having like metal fans not understanding that we were a metal band was very difficult for us when we released Ascendancy. So I think the Crusade is why we rebelled so hard against everything we did in Ascendancy. And the Crusade being in that weird place with the band as well, we just didn't want to do much extensive pre-production. We just wrote the music, said, let's make something that's completely opposite. For Vengeance and Silence, it was our producers that said, all right, let's not make the stuff too there. Let's have it 60 to 75% there. I want you to be malleable. Don't want you to be overly sold an idea. Because a lot of bands, when they finish their stuff 99 to 100% there, they don't want to make any changes in the studio. They're like, the song is done. We're not going to expand upon it. So that made sense why those producers wanted to do that. But those 3 records as well. Sorry, I'm kind of going on tangents. I'm trying to hit all the ingredients of what.
Yeah, that's all good. There's a real. It feels like with Trivium, there's been a real journey to get to this point you're at right now.
Yeah.
All bands go on a journey, but you can really sense the kind of the steps you've taken and the kind of the end result that has led to, which is what the Dead Men say. You can really feel each step you've taken to kind of get here. So I can definitely see a lot of different things to get through.
With those 3 records as well, we decided to consciously stay in a lane. We said, we're going to stay here. We're not going to go over here. But the other 6, we allowed everything to happen. And I feel like that's why I love the other 6 so much. That's why I know that our fans love the other 6 so much. And that's why those other 3, while there are some really fantastic songs on them, it didn't allow that full breadth of what Trivium is. And what Trivium sound is allowing everything to be there. Simplicity and complexity, technicality and brutality and moments of melodicism and simplicity, technicality, like all those things have to exist for it to truly be a Tribune record. And that's how what the Dead Men Say and what Sin in the Sentence are. Sin in the Sentence, from Ember through Sin, was eight records that were opposite from each other. Like, I used to think Ember and Ascendancy were linked, like Ember was the baby brother, but it's really not. It's actually quite different. There's a lot more metalcore, like early 2000s influence of metalcore, early 90s era of melodic death metal, and then 80s thrash that is Ember. And then Ascendancy expanded upon that with more ingredients brought in. So eight records that were different. Sin captured the best ingredients of 1 through 7, and 9 captured the best ingredients of 1 through 8. So it's just allowing anything to happen, not setting any boundaries, truly having the music there between the four of us before ever setting foot with a producer, and then working with a producer that's not going to come in as a leader, working with a producer that wants to work on the same page like a fifth band member as us. And those are the main ingredients of why and how we got to Dead Men.
Awesome. Well, like I said, it's a hell of an album, and we'll do the full review on a future episode of the podcast for sure. One of the things we thought we'd do with you this time out is we talk about some of the music you've been listening to recently, because a lot of people are looking for good stuff to listen to. We all got more time on our hands these days. Let's use it to get into some more metal where possible. So you sent me, when I asked you for some ideas and what you wanted to talk about, you sent me an absolute banquet of metal to kind of pour over. Initially, you sent a few tracks over, and then you sent like a really long playlist with loads of great stuff on it. So we'll kind of pick bits and bobs from there. I thought what was interesting is you kind of mentioned a lot of this stuff is stuff that actually went into influencing Ascendancy.
I felt that'd be appropriate because, you know, Ascendancy is the record that really introduced Trivium to the UK and gave us our first home. So I wanted to go over the ingredients that people maybe don't know so much about, because when people first thought of us, they're like, all right, these guys, you know, they listen to Metallica and Megadeth, Pantera, and Testament, Slayer. It's like, yeah, that's what got us into metal. But the reason why Ascendancy and the reason why Trivium is so unique is because we allow all these other things within. So I think that a lot of these tracks would be super eye-opening to people to go, wow, that is an ingredient of Trivium. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, let's get stuck straight into it. Death, The Sound of Perseverance, 1998. Death's final album, of course, before Chuck passed away. Why was this the album you kind of wanted to flag up in particular? What do you think about this record in terms of what represents for the journey Death had up until that point?
This Amazing was my first record hearing Death, obviously, at the end, which is kind of bizarre. I did go backwards. I do recognize and love how much individual thought patterns and symbolic and human are on the evolution of what we do. But sound was the first time I ever heard guitar playing married with vocals like this. Because at this point, I had already been into black metal and death metal, melodic death metal. But then hearing this other interpretation of death metal, hearing how Chuck treats his guitar lines, like using so much vibrato and almost sounds like Eastern music / Asian music, especially on like Voice of the Soul. What I really learned from Chuck as well is bizarre technique, like that kind of down picking that I do so much in Ascendancy. I learned from listening to Death, Sound of Perseverance and Warp Zone by Martyr. Those two records are the hidden gigantic ingredients of Ascendancy that I think people at first would never really imagine. But when you listen to those two records, you notice all those complexities. Martyr is the band I learned all those bizarre jazz chords from.
I was going to say, they were one of the bands that I wasn't so familiar with, actually, to be honest. So I kind of went and got into them a bit. So Martyr, a Canadian death metal band, very mainly active from the mid-90s to mid-2000s. And like you said, they got so much going on there. They sneak in loads of thrash metal. There's some progressive influences in there. It's a real mishmash of styles and pace and time signatures. How did you get into those guys? Because they weren't really, we're kind of a similar age, and they weren't really on my radar when I was getting into the heavy.
I never knew them, but we were, I was good friends with Jason Sukoff, who did Blue Demo, Ember to Inferno, Rotor United, Caphronome, Ascendancy. We just finished the Blue Demo. I think it was just finished Blue Demo, or maybe we just been getting close to finishing Ember. Well, I was asking Jason, because Jason is an unbelievable guitar player, unbelievable songwriter, singer, producer. So Jason, how do I get good? Was basically the question I asked. And he's like, if you want to get good, learn this. And he hands me a tab book of Martyr's Warp Zone. I was like, I've never heard of this band. I don't know who this is. So I started listening to it. And through Jason, I learned that they were heavily influenced by Atheist, Cynic, Early Death, Jazz, Daniel Mungrain, their main songwriter, is now the live guitar player, and I believe the full-time band member of Voivod now. But this dude can play like Marty Friedman as far as the picking goes, but he can also do very bizarre jazz playing like Alan Holdsworth. So I think he's got his jazz composition theory degree, like he's like formally studied or like classically trained in jazz. And he mixed those things. That's why I always describe them as like a tech death jazz band. I still have the tab book. There was a time where I was trying to, Jason's like, if you learn this whole book, you're going to be the best guitar player. I could not learn the whole book. Daniel is just one of those guitar players, like an absolute freak at guitar. A lot of the guys we're seeing now that are incorporating these bizarre jazz or tapping techniques or extreme legato techniques, it all is from Daniel. Daniel was doing this stuff before everyone else, even on the record before Warp Zone. The record after Warp Zone, Feeding the Abscess, is insane. It's very, very weird. I believe both guitar players are in a different tuning from each other. Okay. Super tech, super spastic. But if people want to get started, start with Warp Zone, and you'll start to see those chords that became the chords that I use on like Ascendancy and Suffocating Sight. Just strange chords that you wouldn't normally picture to be there. But that death and martyr thing is like two really big components of the rhythm guitar playing and the songwriting of Ascendancy.
Wow, that's awesome. Definitely a good band for more people to check out if they want to kind of expand their Canadian death metal knowledge a little bit, which is never a bad thing. Yep. One of the bands I was really interested in that you mentioned for this, that was such a mainstay of the scene at the time, never seemed to quite get the same amount of attention as a lot of their peers. So Poison the Well, yep. Kind of huge force on the metalcore scene in the early 2000s. And it always felt to me like they were kind of almost like the connoisseur's choice of metalcore band at the time. You know, you had bands like Killswitch Engage, Chimera, 36 Crazy Fish, Shadows Fall all breaking through, and Poison the Well were kind of right there with those bands, but they never quite seemed to get that slightly over the top into the mainstream consciousness. Why do you think that is? Because they were fucking great.
Yeah, the former bands you mentioned definitely leaned a lot more metal than Poison the Well did. I feel like Poison the Well they were like hardcore, and like, this is just what I gathered from their music, they were like hardcore kids, punk kids, that liked bringing like a metalized sound.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, yeah, I feel like a band like Shadows Fall started metal, maybe. I could be wrong, they can correct me, but I feel like they started in the metal roots and then brought in hardcore, and they brought in sort of the Swedish sound and death metal and like that.
That's fair.
But Poison the Well, I think they were one of those bands that were too ahead of their time when they came out. Because now if you listen to metalcore bands now, you're like, Poison the Well was doing this. Poison the Well was doing this on Ops in December and Tear from the Red. But what's scary is sometimes when I meet like really young kids that are in a metalcore, they don't know this band. Like, you have severely missed out on like the middle era of the roots of metalcore and hardcore. Poison the Well was one of the first like true metalcore bands I heard. Before I made Ember, I was into all the thrash bands that we all know, got in all the Gothenburg bands that we all know. And then I started getting metalcore. The metalcore bands that showed me what metalcore was Heaven Shall Burn, Whatever It May Take, Caliban, Shadow Hearts, Poison the Well, Tear from the Red, and also like They're Only Chasing Safety by Under Oath, which I consider more metalcore, Perseverance by Hatebreed, Jane Doe Converge. I hope I put Jane Doe in there. I'm not sure if I did, but Jane Doe was a big influence on Ember to Inferno, actually, those like really dissonant, nasty parts. So it's just that like that subtle influence from those bands is what made Trivium a little bit different than like a melodic death thrash band. Those big open simple breakdowns that I would use in like When All Light Dies and Pillars of Serpents, Rain, Pull Harder, those are more from bands like Poison the Well and On Broken Wings and that era of late 90s, early 2000s metalcore and hardcore.
Sure, that's cool. And definitely stuff that can be seen there. And I don't know, maybe Poison the Well will be one of those bands. I don't think they've been very active for the most part over the last decade or so. Would be really great to see them be one of those bands that kind of come back and a bit better appreciate.
That'd be amazing. I mean, that record is one of the most important metalcore records to me ever, Tear from the Red, because those moments of extreme brutality and then having like the kind of thing you'd never expect. It's more like, and I'm using this term purely as complimentary sense, and it's not what they did, but like that idea of like that kind of like punk emo singing, like emo. Like when I use the word emo, I use it complimentary. I do not use it derogatorily. And maybe the band hates that I'm using that word, but something you'd see more from bands like that, like these really beautiful moments brought into that, like that
kind of fragile higher, and
more emotional versus being like power metal vocals or something really like intense, like metal uplifting. I feel like it was more of that. Yeah, like you said, like fragile.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned Caliban briefly there, and I thought them and Heaven Shall Burn, while not being musically exactly on the same level, Caliban more in the metalcore realm, Heaven Shall Burn more kind of in the extreme side of things. But, you know, two very respected and long-running German bands that never really quite took off in the UK in the same way they did in Europe. I don't know if that was the case in America as well, but Really cool and highly influential bands that maybe people don't realize just how influential they both are.
I mean, those two bands, those were some of the first metalcore bands I ever heard, because when we got signed to Lifeforce, Lifeforce was a tiny German vegan straight edge metalcore label. Like, I mean, I'm not vegan or straight edge.
We've all been on one of those, Matt.
Yeah, yeah. So they signed us and he sent me these records, like, you to check these bands out. And Whatever It May Take and Shadow Hearts, I was like, I have never heard music like this in my life. And having really understood melodic death metal already, I said to Stefan and Lifeforce, I was like, man, Amon Amarth, I was like, Heaven Shall Burn reminds me of hardcore dudes playing Amon Amarth riffs. And Stefan's like, exactly. He's like, that's exactly how I describe their old stuff too. Like, it's hardcore dudes that can play like metal guys, but they've got the roots and the ethos of hardcore music and the lyricism of like hardcore and the ethics of hardcore, but they can play like super intense melodic epic metal, which I really liked a lot. And then Caliban having those beatdown parts with also fast thrashy things. I think Shadow Hearts was like, hearing that in Heaven Shall Burn is when I wrote Pillars of Serpents and When All Light Dies. And those were the last two songs written for Ember to Inferno. And everything else before that, I've been listening to like Poison Well and Converge on top of the melodic death metal and thrash stuff. But then hearing those bigger breakdowns, that's why I started tuning down. That's why like those two songs are in drop D, because I could tell the Caliban, I think they're in probably drop C on that record. And Heaven Shall Burn, I don't know, I would imagine they're like B standard or something like that. But those bands showed me of re-adopting the idea of melodic death metal in a different way with hardcore.
Yeah, sure. And that kind of brings us quite smoothly onto the plethora of melodic death metal that you mentioned in one of the other playlists you sent over. I mean, these are all just such vital bands. I think most people kind of consider In Flames, Dark Tranquillity and At the Gates as kind of like the holy trio of melodic death metal and kind of the real forefathers of where that whole scene came from. But also Arch Enemy and Soilwork, two other bands you mentioned that were just both vital as well. I thought it was really interesting that you picked for Arch Enemy, you tricked a track from Wages of Sin. Because to me, that's a record that doesn't really seem to get much kudos or much attention from the Angelo Gosso era. But to me, it's my favorite Angelo Gosso album.
I think
a lot of people really got into Arch Enemy on, actually, yep. Because by the time they did Anthems of Rebellion and We Will Rise, it felt like a lot of people were kind of ready for that next record.
Yep. I think Wages is still, that is still my favorite Arch Enemy record. That's still, I think, one of the greatest things they've ever done. Everything about it's perfect. It's got that like epic Euro metal feel that people, I think, feel from power metal while not being a power metal band, a melodic death metal band that doesn't feel like a Gothenburg band at all. Because, I mean, they're not from, I think Charlie might be from Gothenburg. I'm not sure who else is from Gothenburg.
Yeah, most of the bands are.
Yeah, they're not from there. So it's a band that incorporated that melodic death metal sound, but also brought in so much more of the new wave of British heavy metal sound and that Stockholm and Tampa death metal sound. Mike Amott obviously is one of my favorite lead guitar players, because I put wah on pretty much everything I've ever done, and that idea is from him. And you mentioning the trinity of melodic death metal. It's so interesting to me, because like now I meet a lot of people that are getting into In Flames now, which is awesome. And I always tell them, I was like, if it weren't for Jester Race through Reroute to Remain, I would not exist. Like Trivium would not be a band without those records, if we're just purely talking about In Flames. So I encourage everyone, Jester Race, Horacle Colony, Clayman, Reroute to Remain, get those records immediately, because those things are like some of the most formative records. I feel like bands like Killswitch wouldn't sound like Killswitch without them.
Like, I feel like one of the single most important metal bands to emerge from the 90s. Like, you're talking about Pantera and Korn and Sepultura and all those bands that kind of made it big in that time. I know some of them obviously started before that. But then In Flames are right up there as well. One of the most important bands ever.
Yep. And then it's funny, because I think on that playlist, I actually put in something from Haven, from Dark Tranquillity. Because Dark Tranquillity, for people that don't know, I know you, I'm sure you know, but like, originally Anders was the singer, Anders from In Flames was the singer of Dark Tranquillity, and then Michael was the singer of In Flames, and they switched after the first two records. But the old Dark Tranquillity stuff is some of the best melodic death metal Gothenburg sound stuff there is. But Haven is where I felt like they brought in much simpler, more open, incorporating electronic stuff like Reroute to Remain did, but it feels like melodic death metal plus Depeche Mode. Like, it feels like Violator plus Dark Tranquillity. And that's why I love that record so much. Emptier Still, that should have been a single. That should have been like if they were a crossover band now, that could be a radio single today and do very, very well. I mean, Michael's singing voice is too powerful to have that screaming voice as well. And that band's amazing. Yeah, Soul Work, I think Predator's Portrait is one of the records. Predator's Portrait, the record after it, and Reroute are the ones where I went, wow, I can sing and scream, and that's okay. You're allowed to do both.
Sure. So those, do you think those Soul Work are a little bit underrated or a little bit taken for granted?
Criminally underrated.
They're not really treated like kind of as much of a kind of, I guess they're not founding fathers in quite the same way some of the other bands on that list are. But you go back to some of those records, you mentioned Predator's Portrait, Chain Heart Machine is a classic. I mean, if you want an example of vital, modern sounding melodic death metal with that kind of like slightly synthy, catchy vibe under it, I mean, Natural Born Chaos is one of the greatest albums ever, but they never quite seem to get the same kudos.
Yep. I don't know why. And I would say their new record, Verkleiten, is, that might be their best record ever, the new one, wow, which is a rare thing to say that someone's new one. I mean, Bjorn is one of the best singers I've ever heard. He can scream like anybody of any range, and he can sing like Halford and sing really low and also sound like modern metal out of the States, but then also sound like a Euro power metal band. It's
like he could bench press most people as well.
Yeah, they are one of the most criminally underrated metal bands of all time.
Absolutely.
And people need to do their part, because I feel like Amon, In Flames, Arch Enemy, Dark Tranquility, and Soul Work should all be packing 5,000 to 10,000 people a night in Europe. It shouldn't just be like two of those bands. It should be all of them. They're all just too damn good. And I feel like a band like Soul Work has also influenced bands like Killswitch and Shadows Fall, probably. Definitely Trivium, massively for us.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I'm just going to spread the word.
Yeah, long may it continue. One band that is on the list, the Ascendancy list that you sent over, that I just wanted to kind of finish on, because I was fascinated to know where it came from, was Muse.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. where what?
look at Declaration. Declaration, okay. At the end section with those chords that build up, the da da da, I'll be right here, falling away, fighting. Okay. Getting into Muse, I got into Muse on Absolution, and I was really into how they mixed classical progressions into, I mean, they're doing indie, but it feels like Queen. It feels like rock plus indie.
What kind of prog indie classical or something?
Exactly. And I was so into Bellamy's usage of classical progressions and how he'd make chromatic progression centers, because I used to never like the idea of chromatic, but then realizing that he got the idea from Chopin and him integrating it in with heavily distorted guitar and Queen influenced rock and making these beautiful ballads. This was actually, I feel like the choruses on Ascendancy are more like Muse than they are like In Flames. If you look at these big sing-song choruses like Light to the Flies or like Ascendancy, those are more like derived from Beatles era choruses than they are like a Zeppelin kind of chorus. And I feel like Muse stemmed from Beatles, Queen, and metal arguably stems from Zeppelin. So I feel like Trivium choruses have always been more of that Beatles formula of a chorus. I'm not saying we're as good as by any means, but that kind of like where the chorus lifts like a chorus should, like what you think of a chorus versus a metal chorus, like Walk or Roots. Or Master Puppets. Maybe not Master Puppets. Master Puppets is more of that like sing-song chorus. But like a chorus where it's just two words, like Walk or In Waves. Like that's more from, it's more from maybe like a rock song. Like some of the AC/DC stuff where it's just like a hook, a couple of words versus a full paragraph or a sentence of sung stuff. Yeah, but Muse Absolution was actually a very, very big influence on this record.
That's really interesting you say that, because one thing I've always thought about Trivium, which does really set you apart, is that you're really not afraid to get wordy with stuff. Like sometimes I hear a phrase or even just a word that I hear you sing, and I just think there's no other band that would put that word in there. Like,
thank you.
Like Catastrophist. Do you know what I mean? Like that. I was like, who the hell puts the word Catastrophist in a metal?
We had an A&R guy that was so pissed that we had two A&R guys on Ascendancy. And one of which said two things. We should cut Dying in Your Arms off the record, which he was completely wrong, made freaking BBC Radio 1. And two, he said the use of the word deconstructing was stupid in Drown and Torn Asunder. He's like, you shouldn't be saying deconstructing. He's like, that's a stupid word to use. I'm like, I'm leaving.
That's a stupid one.
I mean, we've been using weird large words. I mean, I know I've used Inception in two titles now, but Inception was on Ember, and I've always liked large large words. I feel like I wish I remember the J.K. Rowling quote from the final Harry Potter book of Dumbledore saying how words are our most. It's a really good. I wish maybe we could pop it up on the screen and after or something. But Dumbledore has this great quote about how words are our most.
This is what's good about us doing this over the magic internet. I can find it. Dumbledore quote words.
Yes.
Well, that's going to send up loads of shit, isn't it, if I Google that?
It'll be a lot of
here memes. We go. Words are, in my not-so-humble opinion, our most inexhaustible source of magic, capable of both inflicting injury and remedying it.
There it is.
There you go. How about that? That's beautiful. And maybe that's a wonderful way to finish up here with some Harry Potter. let's quickly run through all these excellent bands you mentioned, because there might be people listening to this or watching this who kind of want some rough place where to start. So if you could only pick one track to just throw on a playlist from all these bands, let's try and do that if we can. I know it's not easy. Let's start at the top. Let's start with Death.
Can I consult my list while we're here? You're gonna lose my face for a second. Or can we do the ones off the playlist that I sent? Those were, I felt like, the top picks.
Well, on the Death one, you sent the whole album over.
Oh, shoot. If you go to the other playlist, that's the one that's got all the other stuff on there.
Oh, okay.
That would have had a singular Death song. I thought of the exact song to really pinpoint the Ascendancy influence.
Scavenger of Human Sorrow is on here. Mm-hmm. We going with that? All right.
Yep.
And then, so we got Reroute to Remain, the title track from In Flames. Hysteria by Muse. Still stick with that. Mm-hmm. Burning Angel by Arch Enemy. That's a great song. Follow the Hollow by Soilwork. Empty as Steel by Dark Tranquility. What else have we got on here? I mean, there's loads of stuff. It's
could we put that playlist up there as well? Oh, with the link so people can jump in, or even just copy paste the whole playlist? List. Yeah.
Oh yeah, sure. Then we'll do that. Then we'll put the whole thing up with the post where we do the podcast, and we'll put it on the YouTube video as well. So
yeah, because there's just so many other really fun little influences that, while we talk about all this heavy stuff, and like I was listening to Puritanical Misanthropic Euphoria, so much of Dimmu Borgir and all those things, there are also things on there like
Dashboard. I just spotted something that's literally, I would have talked about this if I'd seen it the first time around. The Leaving Song Part 2 by AFI. What a song! What a band. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Phenomenal. What's nuts album. Is like that high note that I hit in Pull Harder. That's when I started getting into AFI, and I was like, "Oh, you can sing high too," and that makes sense. So it's like blending in things like AFI, early Fall Out Boy, early My Chemical Romance, Beloved, early From First to Last, all that stuff on top of the super tech death metal plus the metalcore melodic death metal is what made Ascendancy. I think that's why so many people gravitated towards that record, because it has a little bit of everything. There really are elements of black metal, death metal, emo, punk, hardcore, metalcore, all that stuff in this one thing. And that's the same thing we go back to on all of our best records. I feel like the new record too. The new record has moments of punk next to classical, next to death metal, next to things that just shouldn't go. And that's the Trivium sound, maybe. And just having everything and not being afraid to have everything. And it's the times, those three records, where we've said we're going to stay away from these aspects of Trivium, is where we were muting a big part of what Trivium is. And it's just allowing everything to be there. And me saying, no breakdowns, no screaming on Ascendancy, that's muting part of Trivium. And on Silence, not being able to scream and not having a lineup capable of playing the fast technical stuff, that muted part of the Trivium sound. And Vengeance sticking in that same key, same tempo, same lyricism, it stayed away from what Trivium is. So I told Stephen Hill this on the last talk that we had. I was like, if you see some interviews,
I'm talking about right, Stephen Hill.
And I was like, Stephen, if you see me start talking publicly about how I'm going to drop some key ingredients of Trivium, I need you to text me right now. I need you to have a pact with me. Text me. Be like, Matt, you're not doing this again. Because I've done that. And he brought up a really interesting point. And because we actually did the podcast. We did the first part. I had to go because of press, but it went so well. I was like, dude, we need to book another whole batch. So I texted Kirsten, like, please.
Yeah.
I was like, book another batch. But then we realized I didn't record part one. So we had to re-record part one over again. So we did three parts, basically. But in the end, he's like, you know what's really interesting, Matt? He's like, talking to you now feels so different than the first time I talked to you. So the first time you talked to me was on Silence in the Snow. He's like, I was talking to you then, but it was an anniversary of Pull Harder. And he's like, when I brought up Ascending to you, it was like, he was like, it's like you forgot about that song and that record and the great things the band did. And after that talk, I started going, holy shit, we made Ascendancy. This stuff all happened. And it snapped my mind back into a different place. He also referenced something I never thought of, or, you know, having talked for like 3 or so hours about our catalog. our glory days in the UK, it was about 9 or 10 months. We only had about that much time. Like yeah. the band took off, we did those tours, then like a lot of rough stuff happened. Our band wasn't speaking, all the stuff that happened behind the scenes, and including, you know, our favorite bands bullying us and treating us like crap. And then all that stuff made me rebel against the good things. I'm glad it happened as it put us where we are now, but we only had about 9 or so months to even kind of enjoy what happened. And it happened mm-hmm. so fast, we didn't get to enjoy it. So it's like, I forgot about those moments. And it's been a really interesting time in my career now to look back like, wow, look at those great stuff that's happened. And I feel like that Sin has brought everyone across our career who liked all these different records all back into Definitely. One. And now we're back on this place where we can give people music that makes sense of everything we've ever done.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that sums up the new album very succinctly. And I think, you know, with everything that's going on in the world right now, there's never really been a better time for everyone to have a new Trivium album to all get excited about and feel good about. And I'm very confident that when people hear this record, they'll be feeling good about it. What Thank the Dead so Man much. Say is out April 24th. Matt, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much. And
good Likewise, man.
Luck with the rest of the cycle, however that may pan out in these strange times. Yeah,
definitely, find myself in. Definitely. Thank you so much for everything. I'll talk to you soon, man. Stay in touch.
Nice one. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.